This week, 10 years ago, bombs began falling on Baghdad during the move to depose Saddam Hussein during Operation Iraqi Freedom.
It will not be a repeat of any other conflict. It will be of a force and scope and scale that has been beyond what has been seen before. The Iraqi soldiers and officers must ask themselves whether they want to die fighting for a doomed regime. Or do they want to survive?
Then Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld announced the shock and awe campaign. American troops were in Iraq, heading towards Baghdad. The next day, this would be March 21st here, in the last minutes of the program, news came that the campaign was beginning. We had Iraqis Laith Hadi in the studio and Mudaffer on the phone, both anxiously watching their home country from America. On the line, an aid worker named Lisa Niju in Baghdad, putting us in the position of telling her city was about to be bombed.
We know that the B-52s left the UK at noon today, and we are expecting something, but we don't know what.
Yeah. ABC now has joined the outlets reporting that the shock and awe campaign has begun. Again, you're right in the thick of things, and I hope this isn't making you even more nerve-wracked to hear about this.
It has been very stressful. It's very difficult to be sitting here thinking about my family, my wife's family back home.
Yeah, I mean, it's beyond any language to describe it. I mean, seeing, hearing, knowing that people you lived with, you relate to, the most loving people in your life getting bombed like that, and I'm just hoping no harm will get closer to them.
And I know, Mudaffer, you fought against Saddam Hussein in the 91 war.
I did.
When there was a sense there might be a, quote, liberation, which never happened.
I mean, anyone who experienced the uprising in 91 would know that U.S. and the Allied Army hold a huge responsibility of having this uprising failed.
Yeah. Lisa Niju, in Baghdad, We're still hearing reports of heavy anti-aircraft fire in Baghdad, explosions on the outskirts of the city.
This is, I think, the worst thing is not knowing, I think.
Yeah. And then we saw them on CNN, just as our program was ending, green streaks across a black Baghdad sky. Well, Lisa, we just beg you to be as safe as you can. We're seeing pictures of anti-aircraft fire and tracers in the sky above Baghdad.
I wish innocent people or civilian would not get in the middle and get justified by getting killed and justified by anyone, by Saddam Hussein or by U.S. forces.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping they put morality first, then forces second.
Thank you so much. All of you take care. Leif, thank you so much. Remembering shock and awe 10 years ago this week. In 2007, retired Army Colonel, Vietnam veteran, and Boston University professor Andrew Basevich lost his son, Army First Lieutenant Andrew Basevich Jr., to that war in Iraq. The father was a fierce critic of the war long before it started, and we wanted to get his thoughts today. Professor Basevich, welcome back to Here and Now.
Oh, thanks very much.
And I can't imagine your thoughts this week. I'm sure they include private ones.
They do.
But what would you like to share that you think people should be thinking about the war in Iraq today?
I have been taken by how quickly it seems to me that we as a nation have forgotten the war. And I regret that deeply because I think that there is much to be learned here. This is a teachable moment, and I think that we're kind of blowing the opportunity.
Well, what should we be taught? You also say that Iraq might go down in history along the War of 1812, pretty much forgotten except for being the source of our national anthem. That Iraq will be remembered as well, not as a big important war, but a small, insignificant skirmish. Now, for you to use those words, you know, given the loss you had, what do you mean by that?
I think in retrospect, most Americans would see the War of 1812 as irrelevant. I say that because it turned out that the big story of the 19th century, the big story was the emergence of the United States as the richest country in the world. The fact that the British captured Washington, burned the Capitol, sacked the White House, didn't matter. And I'm speculating we may ultimately say something similar about the Iraq War. The big story of the 21st century is likely to be what we presently call the Arab Awakening or the Arab Spring. And I think that the essence of that story is that the peoples who inhabit the so-called Greater Middle East are determined to exercise their right to self-determination. We tried to meddle in their affairs after 9/11 by intervening in Iraq with the expectation that American power could determine the fate of Iraq and, I think, the fate of the Greater Middle East more broadly. Well, we failed.
Because Iraq is teetering on sectarian, well, it's having sectarian violence and teetering on not being held together.
And there is big change afoot in that region of the world. It's change that we neither instigated nor that we can control.
Defenders of the war in Iraq say two things, two different things. On the one hand, they say the toppling of Saddam Hussein encouraged peoples in other countries to topple their own dictators. Also, defenders of the war in Iraq say that the U.S. toppling Saddam Hussein was the way to do it, as opposed to allowing people to topple dictators who might have been friendly to the United States. I'm thinking of Mubarak in Egypt, and there, and then controlling who replaces him.
I would argue strongly that it is absurd to claim that the U.S. intervention in Iraq in any way triggered, promoted, inspired the Arab awakening. There is plenty of evidence the U.S. intervention in the Iraq war was the source of increased anti-Americanism, not of appreciation.
What have you been thinking as we've been hearing voices of the architects of the war in Iraq speak? Recently, Dick Cheney, in a Showtime special, said he'd do it again in a minute. Paul Wolfowitz, in an interview with the Sunday Times, conceding mistakes. He was considered an architect of the war. He rejects that label. But he also says he was not the architect, but it didn't go according to his plan. Interestingly, you wrote an open letter to Wolfowitz in Harper's, I think before his interview came out in the Sunday Times, you're nodding yes, saying the war in Iraq pretty much was his plan, and he was following the teachings of Albert Wallstetter, a name most Americans don't know. So what do you think in particular of Wolfowitz admitting mistakes?
I know Dr. Wolfowitz slightly. I worked for him when he was the dean of the School of Advanced International Studies 20 years ago. He is one very, very smart man. It doesn't surprise me in the least that the Cheneys and the Condoleezza Rices, that the Donald Rumsfeld, continue to defend the policies that they promoted. I think that they are fundamentally dishonest. But there are also mediocrities. I think Wolfowitz actually is of a different cast, and I would hope that he would have the courage and the honesty to actually do the sort of retrospective analysis that the war deserves. Now, the interview in the Times of London would suggest that he's not willing to take on that challenge, and I think that's regrettable.
Well, here's some of the things he said. He said there should have been Iraqi leadership from the beginning, rather than a 14-month occupation led by an American viceroy and based on this idea that we're going to come in like General MacArthur in Japan and write the Constitution for them. What a mistake it was to completely disband the Iraqi military. He said too many Iraqis were excluded by a program to purge members of the ruling Ba'ath Party. This is something critics said, that in throwing out the Ba'ath Party with the bathwater, you were losing potential leadership. And the biggest hole in post-war planning was not to anticipate the possibility of an insurgency. That seems like he's doing some soul searching.
I don't think so. What he's giving is a recitation of errors made subsequent to the invasion that, quite frankly, almost everybody subscribes to at this point.
Yeah, you're saying, what about the invasion itself?
Was the Bush doctrine of preventive war a good idea? The foreign policy tradition to which the United States at least professed to adhere up to this moment said that war really is something that only should be used as a last resort. In the wake of 9/11, Paul Wolfowitz, drawing on the writings of Albert Wallstetter, argued to the contrary, made that argument in part because of the supposed danger posed by people like Saddam Hussein, but also made the argument because of a confidence they expected that it would be a short war ending in a decisive victory with very modest costs. Neither Wolfowitz nor any of the others has really owned up to the magnitude of the costs that were sustained as a result of their miscalculation. The costs that we have paid are staggering and that we'll continue to pay. I'm just distressed by the unwillingness of Wolfowitz and others to fully own up to the magnitude of the catastrophe that they helped to construct.
Andrew Bacevich, one of the critics of the Iraq War before it started. There were others. On this program, we heard from analyst Anthony Cordesman, who doubted the Bush administration claim that an occupying force wouldn't be needed. From Osama bin Laden's biographer, who said Osama bin Laden hated the more secular Saddam Hussein, especially after Saddam invaded Kuwait. He said bin Laden asked Saudi leaders if he could lead the Gulf War against Saddam. The U.S. did instead. Those voices were lost in the post-9/11 drumbeat to war. When we come back, we'll ask Andrew about claims now from the war's architects that history will view it as a success. That's in a minute, here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at mathworks.com.
Welcome back to our conversation with Andrew Bacevich, a retired Army colonel, Vietnam War veteran, and Boston University professor, on this week's 10th anniversary of the Iraq War, which he opposed before it started and before he lost a son to it. Of course, President George W. Bush, Vice President Dick Cheney, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, and his assistant Paul Wolfowitz all pushed for war. In a recent London Sunday Times interview, Paul Wolfowitz admitted that mistakes were made after the 2003 invasion of Iraq, but he pointed to the Korean War as proof that history will decide whether the Iraq War is a success in the long run. So, Andrew Bacevich, your thoughts?
Well, I mean, the basic point is correct. With the passage of time, a situation matures and can lead us to view it in retrospect in a somewhat different light. And I do think the Korean War is a good example of that. Back in 1952, Harry Truman was probably the most unpopular president in all of American history, blamed for Korea, which was not going to end in an American victory. If we fast forward to the present moment, the fact that the Korean War ended in a tie, as it were, is less important than the fact that we've had stability on the Korean Peninsula. We've seen the development of South Korea into a democratic and prosperous country. And Paul Wolfowitz, understandably, would hope that a half century from now, people would say the same thing about the Iraq War. And maybe we will. I think it's unlikely. And that said, all we can do at the present moment is make our judgment on what's occurred to this point and the consequences that have ensued from our invasion. And those consequences have been almost entirely negative. So yes, history may someday render a future judgment. And maybe it'll be one that'll make Paul Wolfowitz look better than he looks right now. I myself doubt it.
We know that George W. Bush split with Dick Cheney towards the end of the administration. We know that there had been infighting in the Bush administration over going to war. Now Wolfowitz is excoriating people like Powell. And we know that towards the end of the administration, George Bush had split with Dick Cheney, in part over George Bush not pardoning Cheney's assistant, Libby. What do you expect to hear over time from George W. Bush? Will he be Dick Cheney? Do it again in a heartbeat in full? Will he be Wolfowitz? Maybe we did it wrong. What do you...
I don't know. In some respects, I think President Bush actually may be a more serious person than the ideologues like Cheney and Rumsfeld. It's his personal religiosity, I think, that may make Bush a more serious person. He is somebody, I believe, who would take seriously the moral consequences of the Iraq War. Now, he may not be sufficiently courageous to fess up to those consequences in public, but I suspect that the losses we have suffered, the deaths, the lives shattered, the upheaval we created in Iraq as a consequence of his decision to invade, may actually weigh more heavily on his conscience than do those same realities on the consciences of people like Cheney and Rumsfeld.
Do you see a Robert McNamara moment? He, of course, the defense secretary during Vietnam, who came full circle in his apologies for that war.
Well, that's an interesting question. You remember, it took a long time for McNamara, who clearly brooded about Vietnam for years and years. Took a long time for him to come around to making that public acknowledgement that, you know, we were wrong. And it will be very interesting to see if George W. Bush's brooding about Iraq. I hope he broods about Iraq, to see if that will produce a similar candor before he meets his maker.
By the way, why isn't Vietnam the same as Korea? Vietnam, you know, huge criticism, thousands died. Again, this idea of beating back communism only produced a divided country, a South and a North. But the South and the North, unlike North and South Korea, have been much more successful in coming around and opening to the world. So if Korea is seen by history as having worked decades later, you're nodding yes, why isn't Vietnam seen that way?
Well, I think that's a very good question. And I think the simple answer is that Vietnam sticks in our craw in ways that Korea may have done briefly, but we were able to clear our throat. Vietnam sticks in our craw in ways that the Iraq War doesn't. It's possible to argue that on Korea that the tie created conditions in which we could claim some amount of credit for the subsequent stability and for the development of a democratic and prosperous South Korea. But in the case of Vietnam, even though you're correct, we have a united country in Vietnam that seems to be doing relatively well.
Capitalists.
Well, that's the outcome of an American defeat.
Defeat.
We cannot claim any credit at all for whatever positive advances Vietnam has made. Had we never stuck our nose into that circumstance following the French failure of 1954, reunification of Vietnam would have happened much more quickly, at far less cost to everyone, and we wouldn't have all the blood on our hands that we do have as a consequence of our determination, failed determination, to create an independent Republic of South Vietnam.
Yeah, we left hanging off the struts of a helicopter fleeing Vietnam, as opposed to when we left Korea, it was at least with the South,
yes.
A win in the South.
Right.
Just remind us, how many U.S. troops died in Vietnam?
58,000.
Yeah. That's Andrew Bacevich, professor of international relations and history at Boston University. His 2005 book, The New American Militarism, How Americans Are Seduced by War, is going to be reissued this spring with a new afterword, which you can read at hereandnow.org. Professor Bacevich, thanks as always.
Thank you.
So, do you remember where you were 10 years ago? Did you feel you needed to support the administration post 9/11? Or did you, like, ridiculed UN Weapons Inspector Scott Ritter, remember him? Always doubt the claims, since disproven, of weapons of mass destruction. Let us know your thoughts at hereandnow.org, on facebook.com/hereandnowradio. We'd love to hear from you. Latest news is next. Here and Now.